This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Faye Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, it's a beautiful day.
It really is. It's a nice sunny weekend. We're going to have a nice little recovery from the little cool weather we saw earlier this week. And now it's just going to be just a brilliant weekend.
It is. Do you remember on Friday how cold it was?
Like last week?
No, this week. At my house, it was 32, by the way.
Oh, in the morning. Oh, yeah.
In it was the morning time, yes.
Yeah.
Not during the day. It got warm, but it was certainly cold when it started out, you know?
Yeah, we were flirting with, I think, around 35, 32, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, real cold.
Yeah.
And this is March. Did you know it's March?
I know it. It seems like it was just like yesterday. It was like Thanksgiving.
I know. I mean, time is running.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody better be getting stuff together.
I know. It's like next week, it'll be like Christmas already.
I know. I mean, we have to hurry. The year is just pounding along.
I know.
And do you know what yesterday was?
Friday?
Texas Independence Day.
Oh, that's what I meant. It was Texas Independence Day.
That's right. And we have to always remember that. When we finally got our independence from Mexico.
Did you celebrate? Did you have a barbecue? A party? Anything?
No.
No?
I did not, and I should have.
Yeah.
But I was trying to buy policies all day. That's what I did. You know, we managed to close on $2 million worth of policies yesterday.
Holy smokes!
Yes, that's what I was doing. It was an important day. It was almost Independence Day for me to get those, you know?
Wow. Well,
yes.
Then we need to get some of that money invested and get some of that that money working and getting some people some money.
That's right, because the Estes policy is now in their bank accounts, so everybody has got money that was in those big policies. So, I mean, a lot of people have been sending emails, Faye, how long will it take us to get reinvested? I'm holding my head, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had so many maturities. We've got so much money right now that we're trying to get invested.
Wow.
And we're working hard on it. And as I said, we managed to close $2 million yesterday. And that'll be good for this next week. A lot of people will be getting in policies this next week.
Good.
And then we had closed another one before that during the week. I think it was $300,000. So, you know, it was over $2 million for the week.
Wow.
Yes, and we needed that very badly. And we've got a couple more, I think a million and maybe a million and a half that is ready to close. And those will probably close first of the week, hopefully.
My goodness. See, and that's the great thing. You know, when people say, oh, my gosh, you know, I just got paid 5 minutes ago for my last investment. When can I do the next one? How fast can I get reinvested? That is a super sign of all kinds of really fantastic things that are going on. Not only are people making money, but they're making money fast, and they have more opportunities to expand the profits that they've already made.
That's exactly right. And we've just had so many. You know, this, as I said, this last year has been a fantastic year for policies coming due, and coming due early. And, you know, I told you that the top person had nine policies mature during the year. And that's an awful lot.
That is a lot. What is an average number of policy maturities to go through in a year?
Usually, I think about three. Mm-hmm. And if you look back, I think, you know, it's usually about three. Which is usually, you know, a lot, because, you know, it may be a $4 million, it may be a $2 million, it might even, you know, be less. But usually it's several million, as you know, every year.
Yeah.
So we're really proud of the way the year turned out and all the people that have got paid. And there might have been some first-time people in Estes. I don't remember. But I know it spread out because, remember, Estes was $4 million altogether.
That's a huge policy.
It was. Mr. Estes had a lot of policies. And as I said, and you know, we were waiting and waiting for him, and then he did go ahead and pass away. And we had one pass away this last week that was early also. It wasn't real big, but it was early.
Well, and see, that's important to note, because what that means is when a policy matures early, it means that people can take that profit, reinvest it a little bit faster, and then that's how you end up on this it's almost like a snowball effect. It just keeps, you know, the money just keeps rolling in, and people keep making money, and that's really what it's all about. It's not a one-time investment. You know, you invest in this thing, and then, you know, boom, you're going to have millions of dollars, and you're going to retire next week. That's not how this works at all. It's about the planning process, planning for retirement, so that you've got what you need when you need to, or when you want to go ahead and retire. But the planning process has to start. And that starts by making a phone call to you and setting up an appointment to come talk to you next week. And your phone number is
877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
So,
and I start to say, did you see this week, Warren Buffett lost $3.8 billion this week when the stock market tanked?
Uh-huh, I did.
$3.8 billion.
Most people I know combined don't have $3.8 billion.
I don't know of anybody that has $3.8 billion. I know some people I've heard of, but I do not know them personally, I can tell you that.
Wow. See, and that's the thing that we've been not necessarily worried about, but we've been skeptical of. We've been kind of waiting for these things to happen because it's like a balloon. It just keeps blowing up and getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And at some point, we had a feeling that it was gonna pop and it was gonna bust. And I think that's happened to a lot of people, really, you know, especially over the last couple of weeks with it so up and down. When it comes to planning for retirement, you don't want to invest and invest and invest and be in the stock market for years and years and years, and then all of a sudden, you know, when you get closer to retirement, have that balloon bust, and then all of a sudden you lose everything, and then 3 years before retirement, you have to start over. Nobody wants that. That doesn't do anybody any good.
In fact, it will ruin your life completely. If just before retirement, and you say, well, you know, I'm going to retire, and we're going to take our money out of the stock market, and you suddenly have 50% less to take out.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good thing.
Yeah, then you,
especially if you only had $1 million coming to you, and you reduce it down to 40-50%, you really can't retire right then. You've got to go ahead and wait till it comes back.
Yeah,
that may take. You know, we went through that 5- and 6-year deal, and nobody wants to do that again.
No. And it may mean, you know, not retiring and working till you're 80 or until you fall over. Or if you are retired and you're counting on the stock market, it may mean going back to work at, you know, 70 or 72, 75. And people don't want to be doing that. At that age, you want to be enjoying your life.
Well, we would think so. Now, I know a lot of men that do not plan to retire.
Really?
They say, no, I'm enjoying what I'm doing. But a lot of them say, it. 59, I'm tired, I've had it, I'm going to retire. And they're not even going to wait till 65.
Wow.
So you better be sure you've got that money to take with you when you make that remark.
Yeah.
So, you know, it does. It makes a lot of difference about your life.
Mm-hmm. But you have to start the planning process, and you want to do it in the safest environment possible. Now, obviously, nothing is guaranteed. So, you know, it's you know, don't go into this thinking, oh my gosh, if I, you know, pull my money out of the stock market and I invest solely in life insurance policies, that I'm going to get rich next week and I'm going to retire and there's no risk at all. That's not true. There's risk with everything, and there's three main risks that are involved in life insurance type of policy. Investment.
That's exactly right. And the first and the foremost one is the premiums could go over. In other words, if this policy doesn't mature on time, the policy goes over, then you have to pay your share of the new premiums. And it could be a year, it could go 2 years. Mm-hmm. And usually they're not high. The only ones that are high are those old ones that we talk about all the time, that we try not to talk about. Because those three still have not matured. We've still got those on the books. We've still got to feed them until they do mature.
Yeah.
But the other ones, thank goodness, are small.
And really, and when we talk about, you know, paying these premiums, we're talking about, you know, everybody that's in that particular policy. It's not that one person has to bear the sole responsibility of those premiums. It's split evenly among everybody in that policy. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And so if, let's say, it's a $1 million policy, well, the premiums may be $30,000 now. And you've got at least 10 people in there. So we usually try not to have a premium that's over 3 or 4%. That's mm-hmm. what we try to do. And then we've got some that are so small, it's embarrassing to send them the premium call, you know? And then every once in a while, we have some that are paid up. Or they had a rider that said, if you get terminally ill, your premiums will be paid. They've got that rider that'll kick in. And we've had several that did that, and it was really good because we bought the policy, then our people didn't have to pay a dime if it went over.
See, now that's cool. So even though
it is cool,
the policy goes over, there are some cases where you won't have to pay those premiums. I don't think we mention that very often, but it takes one of those very small slivers of risk and makes it even non-existent at that point.
That's right. It makes it non-existent because they had went into that policy and said, we need to do that, and they set it up for them and said, okay, you have a terminal illness, there'll be no more premiums. We will pay the premiums.
Wow.
And then every once in a while, we'll get one that's paid 2 or 3 years in advance. And I like that a lot, too. And then there's just the regular ones that we usually have, where if it goes over, yes, you have to pay the premium. So that's your biggest risk, is the premium going over and you have to pay. But almost all of our people are accredited, so it would not be a strain on them. They have the money, and it would not hurt them at all, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If it's 300, 400, 500 a year, it would not hurt them. So that's a good thing. And then the second risk is this is not liquid until it matures. Everybody knows that, but we want to tell them that. For new people coming in, that is a risk. If you suddenly needed this cash, you cannot get it until it matures. But our people, most of them, 80%, are all in IRAs. So they're not expecting to be able to take their money out because they know they can't take it out until they either retire or they reach 70 and a half because they're going to have to pay taxes. If they take it out now, they would have to pay a lot of taxes.
Yeah, you want to roll
because
that
remember,
over.
Remember, an IRA hadn't had any taxes paid.
Mm-hmm. You want to roll that over as long as you can.
Absolutely. And that's when they come to us and say, I've got an IRA, I've got a 401k, I want to roll over to you, then it becomes an IRA the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's company sponsored as long as it's a 401k. When it comes to us, then it's an individual policy. And then the other thing is if a life insurance company ever went broke, and we haven't had any of that happen, because these companies are so valuable. I mean, they've got so many billions in assets that somebody would buy them immediately. But remember, we only do A-rated companies. Now, a company might go to a B after we do the policy, but we try to always be careful, make sure it's A-rated. Because your A-rated companies have just got unlimited funds. I mean, really do. And, they pay their claims promptly. And that's what we need. We need A-rated companies always. Sometimes they're double A-rated. And then they've all been in business a long, long time. You know, some have been in business over 100 years.
Really?
But there's companies up north, that started, almost as soon as those little towns started. And what they did, they'd let them pay so much a week. And there was companies did that for years. It was 50 cents a week, and some of it was a dollar. And they came around and collected. Can you imagine? I remember here in Dallas, there was people on Friday, they said, we have to go make our collections. And I didn't understand it at first. Then I got to understand that poor people paid by the week. And as they got paid, they would pay for their little policy.
Really?
Uh-huh.
I didn't know
and,
that.
A lot of the companies became very rich doing that.
Hmm.
Yeah. And totally. They would go, and they had little envelopes. And they would go by, write their name on the outside, put their money in it and seal it and take it back to the office.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, how neat. It's a totally different way than we do it now, but still, I didn't realize it all started that way.
It did. And even I knew people even, oh, I guess 10 years ago that worked for some of those companies. And they had routes, and they'd give you your territory. And on Fridays, all these housewives knew you were coming. And they paid it out of their household accounts to make sure they had insurance. And it paid off. They might have a $1,000 policy. They might have a $5,000 or even a $10,000. But it didn't cost much. It was cheap insurance, and they could afford it.
Wow, how cool.
But that's the way a lot of them started.
So now we have these large policies, and when it comes to bidding on these policies for people to invest in, do you prefer the smaller ones or the big ones, or is there no difference?
Well, you know me. I like the million to 10 million because I can put a lot of people at one time in one policy, and it has the same thing. You know, it's a cancer policy. It's a stage four. It doesn't make any difference, except I like to get more people in a policy.
Yeah. So say you had lots of times
we just buy small ones.
What if you had like a $5 million policy? And let's just, you know, throw out some random numbers here. I know it changes. In each case is different. But say you had a $5 million policy, about how many people might be in a policy that size?
Well, figure it this way. There'd be 10 people, so it'd be 50 people in it.
Okay. So okay. It's $100,000 minimum.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, usually we do 100 minimum.
All right. So people have a really good chance at making some pretty good money. So if somebody had $100,000 in this this policy, that's their sliver of the pie, to say, to make it easy.
Right.
And then say the policy matures, say it's, what would be a good, like an 18-month?
24, because you know, that's what I really like.
Okay, so then say we have a 24-month policy. That means that you're going to get about 1% per month. Which translates
that's what we figure, yes.
To about $24,000.
That's right.
In profit.
Uh-huh.
And so when that policy matures, and that's really all it is. You invest in the policy and you wait for it to mature. You set it and forget it. And then once it matures, you get paid, you get your profit. And then the goal is, or the idea behind the whole concept is, you take that $24,000, you reinvest it, and into another policy or two or three. And really, when it comes down to it, you want to be as diversified as possible.
Yes, because most of our people, you know, do a $100,000 policy. So they may have four policies. They may have five, six, you know, because that's just the way it works.
Yeah. So when it comes to getting paid for your policy or for your investment, how quick is the payout once the policy matures?
It takes 6 to 8 weeks. And a lot of them pay in six, but sometimes it's 8 weeks before we get our money for all the people. But remember, as soon as it matures, 21st Services notifies us by email. Then the bank gets the certified death certificate. Sometimes that can take 2 to 2.5 weeks. And then they send it to the courier, and then when the courier gets it, they pay. And the check goes to the bank, made out to the bank, then the bank distributes it into everybody's account. And that usually takes an extra 4 or 5 days, because if they get a check and it's $1 million or above, they hold it for about 4 days. because they want to be sure it clears before they put it in their base account. And that's just the way banks do it nowadays.
So it's a pretty quick turnaround.
I think it's a very quick turnaround.
Now, we were talking about getting diversified, make sure you're in different policies. And the reason is because there are going to be some that come in early. There are going to be some that go over. And so when you're diversified, it balances out. In the end, it ends up being very, very profitable.
That's right, because you may have three that come in early. You may have three that come in on time. And you might have two that go over. Or you might even have three, you know, depending. But like you say, it does even out.
Mm-hmm. So when you have somebody investing for the first time, what kinds of questions do they ask? Because most people, when it comes to investing, they're used to, you know, a traditional investment like Wall Street. And, you know, they know the risks of the stock market, and it goes up, it goes down, more down than up sometimes. And so they know how it goes. But with something like this, where your risks are very, very small, do people come in a little bit skeptical, a little bit unsure? Do they think, you know, when's the other shoe
going to
drop?
Well, no, they're unsure because they've never done it, okay? Mm-hmm. And they're asking a lot of questions. They want to know how it works, you know, and we, you know, walk them through it. You know, we don't touch their money. It goes direct to the bank. If it's CDs or something like this, they're just going to write a check to Nevada Trust. We airmail it out there. We open the account, and we go from there. Now, let's say it's an IRA. We're transferring it from a 401k to an IRA. Same deal. It'll take 2 to 3 weeks to get the transfer done from their old company. And then it goes direct to the bank. We set their accounts up. The bank handles it from there. From there, the bank makes sure the premiums are paid, and then they get the payoff and pay them at the end. We never touch their money. The money's not going to our company ever, 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 and ever. And that's the way every company that does this should be doing it.
So really, once the investor sets up their accounts one time, that's it. We're just pulling money from accounts and putting money into accounts and reinvesting and things like that. They don't have to go through the process, but just once.
No. Once we get it set up, it's ready to go. Every time we have a policy for them, we're going to email them. Say, here's the policy. Here's how it works. We'd like for you to go in for maybe it's 100, maybe it's 150, whatever. If it's a big policy, we might let them put more money in. But lots of times we restrict it if it's something we're not sure about. Mm-hmm. And we'll say, no, on this particular one, $75,000 is the most. But a lot of our people want a lot of money in one policy. And then a lot of people, we don't talk about it very often, they want to buy one policy for just for them. So lots of times we'll give them a $100,000 policy or a $250,000 policy just for them.
Really?
And I've got one guy, one gentleman, that about 2 months ago, he sent me an email. He said, from now on, I'm not doing any small policies. I want $250,000 or more for me. So I've got several that want policies just for them. They don't want anyone else in it. They want to own the whole thing.
Is that wise? Because investor is the only one that's taking the quote-unquote risk, even though the risks are not that big.
Well, but they've all got a lot of money. So if it's somebody with a lot of money, we're not going to tell them no. We're going to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it went over, they could stand it. Wouldn't bother them at all.
So, and when you say it goes over, we're not talking about huge premiums. I'm sure people think,
no.
Oh my gosh, you know, I could, you know, be paying premiums for the next 10, 20 years and lose all my profits. That's not practical. It's not a practical scenario.
We've never had anybody go 10 years. these policies that we own, that we buy, you know, 30 months is usually the longest that they're saying. And we have had policies go 2 years over. We've got those old policies that went over because we got snookered into that. And they were 90 years old and they're going to outlive us all.
Yeah.
Okay? But we're talking about our regular policies. About 2 years, I think, is the most one of them has gone over.
Uh-huh.
Regular policies. And it can happen. But usually, most of them are on time or I would say really three-fourths, I think, are early. So, I mean, this last year. I think we could go back and look at all the policies, you know, and I believe they most of them were early.
And it's worth pointing out that a lot of these companies that do the life expectancy, they tend to be a little bit conservative as far as how long until the policy they think will mature.
Fasano is a conservative one. And you can usually bet on a Fasano coming in several months earlier than what they say because they're very conservative.
Really?
And the other two, 21st Services, was real good for a while, then sometimes they were wrong, and now they're back up to speed again and they're doing a better job. Then you've got AVS. They're pretty conservative, and they're doing a good job. So, you know, it all washes out in the end.
So let me throw out a little scenario. Let's just say I'm a first-time investor, and I come to you and I say, Faye, I'm really interested in this. I really want to know all the ins and outs. How do I know that I'm investing in a policy that is actually a good investment?
Well, I mean, you've got the reports. If it's $1 million, you're looking at two reports. If it's less than $1 million, you're looking at one. And these are companies that have been in business forever and ever. Fasano has been in business 10 years or 12. The others have been in business like 26. And so if they weren't doing a good job, we wouldn't have any maturities. Okay, it's that simple. And so we know they're doing a good job because of the amounts, the millions of dollars that are maturing.
When you say people are looking at these reports, what kind of reports are they looking at?
From the doctors. These people provide us with the doctor's reports on these people. If the cancer started in 13, we've got one that goes back to 13. If they've been hospitalized for other things, it's in the report. If they got cancer in 17, we're going from 17, we know it's probably 18 months, 20 months, or it might even be 12. But that's who we're relying on is doctors that do this every day, oncologists. We're not relying on me. It doesn't matter what I tell them. It depends on what the doctor's report says. And so, if they can't believe that, they shouldn't do it.
So when people are looking at the reports, they don't need to be a medical expert. You can take regular lay people who don't know the first thing about medicine or anything like that, or cancer or anything. They can look at these reports, and they're in plain English, and they can thoroughly understand the investment that they're getting into.
They should be, if they can read, because, you know, it tells you everything about them. It tells you, you know, that it is stage 4 cancer. It tells how many times they've been already hospitalized, what kind of cancer medication they're on, and how soon they believe they will pass away. And that's what they need to know. Main thing is, how soon are they going to pass away?
Mm-hmm. And so when people are looking at these for the first time, it's important to note that if it's even available for a person to invest in, you've already gone over it with the fine-tooth comb, and you wouldn't have even bid on the policy if it wasn't a good policy. Now, I know people don't want to just, you know, oh, we're talking about a lot of money, I can't just take anybody's word, and that's fine. I understand that. I mean, we are talking about a lot of money, but you've gone over these policies. You make a choice whether you're going to bid or not based on what you see in these reports, and not all policies that come across your desk and that are available are ones that you actually bid on.
No, a lot of them aren't. They aren't going to die during our time frame, so we don't even check on them. We just put those aside. We do have to keep a copy of it by law, but we do reject them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we're looking at policies, I wouldn't be bidding on them if I didn't think they were going to mature, you know? And we've been pretty lucky. The other thing that you do is go to the website and look at the maturities. Look and see how much is matured, how early it was, how much people have made. You can sit there and add that up. It doesn't take you long to figure out how much some of these people made.
And all that information is right there on your website at American Financial.
It's on the website.
Midland.com.
And then you've got people that know someone, and that's what gives them confidence. Mm-hmm. I had some people call this last week. They go to First Baptist Church over in Odessa. Well, they know lots and lots of our clients. And, you know, 80% of our business is from referrals. The people that are making money, they call their neighbor, they call a relative and tell them. And those people come in and talk to us. And I'll say, how did you hear about us? Well, I work with two or three guys that are, you know, that are investors. And every company's probably got a lot of people, you know, that invest with us. So that's how they know.
It's important to note that also, aside from the referrals, because that's a really big deal, because you're not going to refer, you know, anything, whether it's a service or a product or whatever, you're not going to refer anything to your friends or your family unless you thoroughly believe in the product or the service. And so that's a big noteworthy point right there. The other thing is that if by chance, and I'm sure it probably hasn't happened in a while, but if by chance there are some available spots in some of these policies, you will invest your own money in the policy.
Well, you know, I do when there's any availability. Right now, there is no room for me at the end, let me tell you. right now, I'm telling you the truth. It's just everything we've got is going to customers right now because we need to get them invested.
Mm-hmm. So what are the requirements for this type of an investment?
What did you say?
What are the requirements for this type of investment?
Okay. You've got to either be worth $1 million or you've got to have $200,000 a year in income. You must be a qualified investor. That's the government rules. If you're not qualified, they're not going to let you do this. So you need to be, add all your assets up, everything but your personal home. And if it's $1 million, you can invest with us. Or you don't have to be worth $1 million if you make $200,000 every year, and that includes your bonus.
Now, what about somebody who owns their own business?
Well, they're worth usually $4 or $5 million, so they don't have to worry about it.
But the business counts as assets.
Absolutely, okay. The business. If they have a IRA for their employees and themselves, you know, depending on what all they have.
Okay. All right, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, every Saturday morning around this time, we start getting into trivia, and you always have interesting facts or maybe a place to go or something to visit or, you know, something we didn't know about Texas. What are we talking about today?
We're talking about SMU. No, I'm messed up this morning. Excuse me. TCU is what I was talking about. But I was thinking about SMU, wasn't I?
Sure.
There is... When TCU started, it did not start as TCU. The facts of the people who started is so interesting. It was started by the Clark brothers. And they were scholars, they were teachers, and they wanted to start a school for children. Their first thought is they would start a prep school. Now, this is way, way back. I just can't imagine anybody, you know, that far back saying, you know, we'd like to start a school. This was in 1869. These guys came from East Texas, came to Fort Worth with the support of their father. He was Joseph Clark. And as I said, they were scholars, they were teachers, and they were part of the Restoration Movement. These were early leaders, really, of the Disciples of Christ. A major proponent of education. Well, when they got back after the Civil War, Addison and Randolph, they established a children's prep school in Fort Worth. And it was called the Male and Female Seminary of Fort Worth. And it was open from like 1869 to 74. And they had this vision of higher education that it would be Christian in character, but non-secular. Well, Fort Worth changed. If you remember, we talked two or three weeks ago about how Fort Worth started, how the Chisholm Trail came right through it, going to Kansas City rails. And they had this huge influx downtown of cattle, men, and money. And these guys had bought 5 acres right downtown Fort Worth. And it went from a sleepy town, almost like pretty rough. It had a rowdy reputation, vice, boarded houses, everything you can think of.
Full of bandits.
Well, it scared the Clarks to death. They said, we can't have a school down here. They said, it would ruin our reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, okay, we're going to move out to Hood County. Well, that's 40 miles from Fort Worth, to the southwest near Comanche and Kiowa territory. And then in 1873, they went south, and they founded the Adrun Male and Female College. Now, TCU recognizes that in 1873 is its actual year that it was incorporated. And so the Adrun College, it's the only college of higher education west of the Mississippi.
Really?
And it was the first college in Texas, by the way.
Really?
Uh-huh. So these guys were just searching for the right place, you know. So there we go. And then here they were down there. And then Thorpe Springs was their little fledgling college. And that fall, in 1873, they had 13 kids.
Whoa.
So that rose to 123 by the end of the first term. And they recruited prestige professors from all over the South to join them at Thorpe Springs. So then it came to be recognized throughout the United States, and graduates were welcome throughout the country. Well, then in 1889, the Adrun College formed an official partnership with what became the Christian Church. And but the Christian Church was never allowed to do anything there. They never became part of the administration. And later that year, the Clark brothers handed over all the land, the buildings, and assets, and let the university continue as a private college. And they didn't have anything to do with it other than their name, but they required that their relatives would have free tuition the rest of their life.
Cool.
So in 1889, they named it Adrun Christian University. Well, then they moved to Waco. I mean, this Texas Christian was everywhere before it was really established in Fort Worth. So from 1895 to 1910, they relocated to Waco. And it purchased a campus from the defunct Waco Female College. And that was when it was renamed Texas Christian University in 1902.
Hmm.
Then, almost immediately, it was dubbed TCU for real, and this time they were there 15 years in Waco. So then, in 1910, they had a fire, destroyed the university's main building, and they were going to do a building project. Well, you know, I've always loved the businessmen of Fort Worth, and a group of them, they were very enterprising. They came down there and they said, look, we'll give you $200,000 to rebuild if you'll come to Fort Worth. We'll give you a 50-acre campus as an inducement. So, of course, it was moved to Fort Worth, where it is today. It has 272 acres that are used. It has over 300 acres altogether.
Wow. I didn't realize there was so much acreage involved.
It's a huge place. So it consisted of four buildings to start with. You had Clark Hall, Good Hall, and the men's dormitory was called Jarvis Hall, and the women's was Reed Hall. Two of these four original buildings still remain. Reed Hall was originally the main administration building, and Jarvis Hall was the women's dorm. Well, in 1958, they demolished Good Hall, replaced it with the new Clark Hall, and then they renovated it in 2008, And the original Clark Hall, they demolished it in 59, and it became Sadler Hall. Then they had a lady named Mary Cooch Burnett from the famous Burnett Ranch. They received its first endowment from her, and it was a large charitable endowment, and that was in 23. Her husband, everybody in Texas knows who the Burnetts are. He was a legendary rancher. He was a banker and oilman. She married him in 1892. And later she said she believed he was trying to kill her. And she wanted a divorce. Instead, Burke Burnett had his wife committed to a mental institution. It took her 10 years to get her freedom. So with the help of her doctor, she eventually got out. And then she found out he had died and left her nothing, as rich as he was.
Have we featured them before?
Well, I think we might have talked about her before.
I feel like we have at one point. It's been a while, but I feel like we have.
We may have. So anyway, she challenged the will. She eventually got half of her husband's estate, was $4 million in cash. They say it would be $52 million in today's money.
Wow.
And the long years of incarceration had taken a toll on her. Everybody's worried about her health. And in her will, she wrote a will in 1923. She said, I want my entire estate, including a half entrance in the gigantic 6666 ranch, to TCU. So that endowment, there's no telling what it's worth today. Because that ranch is so huge, has so much oil on it, and all the other things. And, of course, we've talked about the Wagner Ranch also.
Oh, yeah.
About it being so huge. So they built the Mary Cooch Library on the first athletic field. And, of course, as you know, or may not know, the Horned Frog is their mascot, and that's the Texas State frog is our little frog for Texas. That's our state frog. It's a horned toad. So, yeah. And anyway, what do you think the endowment at this college is today?
I couldn't even begin to guess.
$1.4 billion.
Wow.
Yes.
Holy smokes.
It has a huge campus, as I told you, 300 acres altogether. There is 10,000 kids that go to TCU.
Wow, 10,000?
10,000. Can you imagine?
Wow. I guess I know it's huge. I guess for some reason I didn't realize it was 10,000.
And those famous two boys, 2 years ago, they were like 13, 14 years old. And they found out that they were geniuses. And TCU said, you come over here, you get free tuition, your mother gets a free apartment for you. And, they were almost ready to graduate in 2 years. I think they have now. But they were some kind of geniuses when they were just, 13, 14 years old.
Wow.
Yes. So they got to go to TCU.
Like officially geniuses, not just a guy walking down the street saying, I'm a genius.
No. They tested them and they said, you're ready to go to college. Yeah. And I mean, they're going, what? Yeah. These little boys, they put them in college classes immediately.
Because I've told people that I'm a genius, and I'm not.
Who believed it? That's what we want to know. How many people believe that?
No, I don't think any.
Oh, my gosh. It makes a good story.
Yeah, it does.
But the Burnett Ranch is one of the famous ranches of Texas, just like the other one, the Wagner Ranch that we did the story of.
Yeah. I remember we were talking about the Wagner Ranch, and that's huge. I don't remember the numbers, but I remember it's just gigantic.
It is gigantic, and I can't remember how big the Burnett Ranch is, but I know it's awfully big. And can you imagine a husband back then could put you in an institution because you were going to get a divorce, and he wasn't giving up half that ranch or all of his money.
I know, right? And then you get out and find out that he's already gone and left you nothing.
Yeah. And can you imagine? You get out, you're broke, you have nothing, and she had to go get an attorney to get her half of the money and half of the land.
Yeah.
But I don't know who the, I should have looked it up. But I don't know who the rest of the Wagner the Burnett ranch went to.
Wow. Yeah, because she only got half, so there's another half somewhere.
Yes, and obviously they didn't have any children.
Yeah.
Because they were, or they would have mentioned it, that they got the money. But somebody should have been trying to get her out all that time.
Yeah.
I mean, it took 10 years for this doctor to get her out of there.
Wow.
And then her health was bad.
Yeah.
I'd have been sticking a little pins in the doll all that time.
That's exactly what gets you put into the institution.
Oh, the doll or the pins. Oh, gosh. Oh, my God.
Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
Now, this is all about growing your money so that you can retire happy and wealthy and early. In the planning process, you want to make sure that you're making the most stable, the safest investment possible. Because, like we said earlier, you don't want to get up to retirement within a few years and then all of a sudden you lose everything. So this is really the safest way to go, is to invest in a life insurance policy. And one way that you can make sure that it is the safest, and you can see for yourself, is all that information that is on page 14. What can people find when you show them page 14? What's that all about?
Well, it tells them everything they should remember. First of all, it's going to tell you who the person is. It's going to tell you the face amount of the policy. It's going to tell you what insurance company, what their rating is. It's going to tell you how much you're going to make, how much you put in case you forgot. It's also going to tell you what percentage is in there. And then it's going to say, okay, if it goes over, this is what it's going to cost you. So you know it in advance. There's never a surprise. You know in advance how much you put in. You know if it goes over, what it'll cost. And then you sign it, saying, I understand everything about the details that I need to know. Because they already know everything else. Mm-hmm. But these are things I've had people call and say, Faye, I forgot. You know, and I say, go to page 14. And that's the best way to do it, because you always know then, okay?
So when somebody comes to you for the first time, and I know there have been people who have listened for a long time, but have never actually sat down to have a conversation with you. They may be thinking about it, but they haven't actually taken any action yet. So they probably have a lot of questions, probably the same questions as you've encountered. What are like one or two or three big questions that first-time investors always have for you that other people probably have as well?
Well, they always want to know how long the policies are. You know, how do they get paid? And they ask, how do they know which policy to go in? And I always say, look, if I bought the policy, I think it's a great policy. And if I tell you to go in, I think you should, because you're new at it and you haven't studied all this yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my recommendation for them. On the first ones, look at it, but then call me, talk to me about it, and you know, I've already decided that it's great for our team, so I would recommend they go in it, those first ones.
Do first-time investors generally want to get in a bunch of policies at once, they're all gung-ho, or do they want to kind of dip their toe in the pool with just one policy and see what happens and then go on from there?
Well, a lot of them will send over $300,000, and you know, we'll divide that up. Or they may send over $300,000 and say, just put $100,000 in it today, and you know, let me look at some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, they can do it any way they want. Most of them are anxious when it's a 401k to get it filled up, and I am too. And you know, we're filling them as quick as we can.
Now, I know we talked about the you know, how to get accredited and you know, all the requirements and things like that, but generally speaking, and I know it varies, but generally speaking, what type of person would be most interested in this type of an investment?
Someone who doesn't want to end up with less money than they thought they would have when they retired. I mean, that would be my first thought. The others is people come to us because they don't want everything in the stock market, or they're getting ready to retire, mm-hmm. and they want to get out of the stock market and get it solid. And those people, Most people come to us a year before they're going to retire, 2 years, or maybe 2 months, and then we scramble to get it done for them. But all the people that do this, they like the idea of knowing what they're going to make. They like the fact that they can look it up at all times. Their money is at the bank. It's not at a brokerage house, and the money cannot be touched by anybody but them. And I like that a lot, too. And then a lot of them, they've been recommended by our other clients, so they like the idea of what they've told them, and they're going for it.
Do you find right now any kind of trends? Like, do you see any kind of like a mass migration of people trying to get out of the stock market, or do you have just a few people here and there?
We have quite a few. In other words, most of our people, that's where they come from every year. You know, we do about $60 million a year, so you know, we have a lot of new clients every year, and then we have a lot that are just renewing and reinvesting.
Mm-hmm. So I know the situation varies for every investor individually, but generally speaking, how long would you recommend somebody do an investment before they retire? So do you recommend, you know, say starting 15 years early or 20 years or 5 years? Or
it depends how much they want to have at retirement.
Okay.
You should you should start as early as possible and then go right on through retirement, just like you hadn't even thought about it. And that way you'll always have enough interest to live on without getting into your principal.
Now, when it comes to, like you say, you know, interest to live on, do you find people, and I don't know how to phrase this the right way, I'm trying to oversimplify things without getting too technical at the same time. So do you find that people have a chunk of money that they live on and then another chunk or pile, as we sometimes say, that they use to just keep investing and keep investing and keep investing, and they've got these different resources of finances in different places?
Some people do. A lot of them just put all the money with me when they retire, and we start, you know, maybe before retirement, we only had a third or half of their money. Then at retirement, they get the rest of their retirement, they put it with us, and then we make sure that they've got enough interest to live on every year as long as they need it. So we start, you know, doubling up, trying to get more interest than we were. And we've already talked to them, so we know how much they're going to need to live on and how much they're going to take out. And most people, you know, designate the amount of interest they want every year out of their account.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how much we have to keep in their account in cash.
So they can pull that money at any time?
Anytime they want it. It's their money.
Okay.
That's what a lot of people forget. It's their money.
We talk sometimes a lot about how the investment itself is not liquid and you cannot get to it. But if you need money to live on, you do have access to other resources.
You have access to that money. From day one, when we take it, we're going to leave so much of it in cash if they're going to retire in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
We don't put it all invested. We leave some cash in there. We have to leave enough cash that they'll always have that same amount, okay?
So it's a very comfortable situation. The investor themselves will come in and they'll designate, okay, I need this much per year to access for travel, for groceries or food or whatever, and then I want this much to invest in, and then I want this much for an emergency, you know, as a backup. So people can lay this all out the way they want to.
That's right.
All right. So then, after
and all they have to do, we have to decide how much, you know, needs to be in cash in there, and however much it is, that's what we're going to work on.
Mm-hmm. So then, after people retire, they still can grow. It's not like you retire on Tuesday and then all of a sudden your investment stops, your paycheck stops, your profits stop. People, for the most part, I would imagine, keep investing afterwards because it is so safe and it is so secure, and people generally don't have to worry about, you know, losing all that they have set aside for retirement, because that's a very scary thing to go into retirement. You lose that paycheck.
Remember, it's in the bank.
Yeah.
It's in the bank.
Yeah, so you're not touching it.
We don't touch it. They're the only ones that can, them and the bank.
And they're still growing their money with further investments.
That's right. So when they retire, all we do is put the other money with this. We put however much cash a year, they say, and it may be $100,000 a year, it may be $200,000. And they may not use it all every year, but the money is there for them to draw out.
Okay. So
to take a long trip or whatever they want to do.
Yeah, so for somebody who's been thinking about this, it's time to actually get up and start doing something. You don't want to be like Warren Buffett and lose almost $4 billion in a week or at all, ever.
That's right.
So really, it's all about the planning process. And so if you've been thinking about getting ready, it's time to stop thinking about it and actually get ready. So what kinds of things do people need to do today to come see you next week? What do they need to gather up to prepare?
Well, they need to bring a copy of their assets over, how much they're making, and then we need to look at all that and decide which way to go.
Okay. So there's nobody in the office today because it's Saturday, but next week you'll be fully staffed. Everybody will be there. You're available for appointments for people to come see you, I assume, yes?
Yes.
All right. And one last time, Faye, what is the phone number that people need to call to make an appointment?
It's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.